better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid. Where's something? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. How you doing? It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for joining us tonight. Boy, interesting weather the last couple of days, isn't it? Haven't seen that golden August light yet, but man, yesterday it felt like the middle of November. Kind of feeling that way in Cotati and Ruta Park this evening as well. Today, at the Sebastopol Farmers Market, though, it was just like the absolute peak of summer. Tomatoes finally everywhere. Few vendors had corn. Market was packed with kids on bikes and, you know, kids in strollers and people with little dogs on their leashes and lots of conversation. It was another great market. I had a really interesting conversation that started out being about soil. And Vivian Hillgrove, who is has been on Mouthful before, she has Mom's Head Garden. She's also, though, in the main part of her life, she is a filmmaker. She does a lot of editing. She was the dialogue editor on movies like Blue Velvet and E.T. Great, great woman, Vivian Hillgrove. And we were talking because she's working on a film about soil. And she made a really interesting point that I think a lot of people don't talk about and think about that much. And that is, you know, you don't feed your plants when you're growing something, you know, and you put a good fertilizer on it, maybe you put some compost on it. What you're doing is you're not feeding your plants, you're feeding your soil. And as soon as she said it, I was like, well, of course, that's why you put plants in the ground, is because they get nutrients from the soil. She said most people don't think that the way that agriculture has been for so long, in recent times, is people think that they're feeding their plants. And so you end up with a lot of things that are almost hydroponically grown because of the amount of water and the amount of chemicals. And I immediately thought of all the conversation that you're hearing. If you listen to talk shows that have anything to do with health, or if you read in that arena, there's increasing evidence that taking a lot of nutritional supplements, vitamins, and all those different kinds of things, yeah, they may be good for you in certain ways, but they're not really as good as when you get all of your nutrients from your food. Beta carotene in a pill is nothing like beta carotene in a bright orange tomato or a properly grown carrot. And anyway, I'm just bringing that up because I thought there was a real intuitive link between those two ideas. We went on to some extremely depressing conversation about the state of the world and healthcare and everything else. And we came up with one great conclusion. If it's all true, if our worst fears are true, dinner has never been more important. You can't affect things on the level that perhaps you might like to. And so you might as well open another bottle of wine, gather people you know or want to know, people you like and people you love around the dinner table, and enjoy yourself. It's never been, I think, more important to really take time for the very human pleasure of feeding yourself and feeding friends and enjoying meals together. So that was kind of a long introduction, but it's, you know, that's what happens to me when I go to the farmer's market. I have conversations with people and we stimulate each other with our conversation. And then I spend the day thinking about these kinds of things. And then I come to Mouthful and it's like the extension of a dinner conversation. So on that note, I want to welcome my guest. We have Terrell Brunet, yeah, I did
right.
Chef originally from New Orleans, spent some time, was it general manager or maitre d' at West County Grill?
GM.
Okay. Yeah. At West County Grill, you were there for a bit, but you are a chef, and now you're working on a benefit for that great nonprofit school out in rural Sebastopol, Nonsuch. The benefit is remembering Hurricane Katrina, am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. Also joining us, Alan Lindsley, who is one of the core teachers at Nonsuch, serving grades 6 through 12.
That's correct, too, yes.
Out in the country, off of Green Valley Road, right?
We're on 14 acres of forested land and orchard off of Green Valley Road on Bones.
Oh, Bones, that's right, Bones.
Bones, yeah.
And founded in 1968?
1969.
1969, 40 years.
40 years we've been out there in the woods teaching kids.
It's I've heard over the years so many good things, and I've had a number of friends who have gone to Nonsuch. So I've always sort of had my eye on you, and there were a lot in the 70s. There were a lot of independent private schools that you could say were, I don't know if they were officially nonprofit, but they didn't make much money. There was Manzanita Joy, which Mary Jameson at the time went back to her maiden name, Mary Silverwood, and became a very, very well-known studio artist. We see her prints everywhere. So she had Manzanita Joy. There was Children's Workshop in Petaluma, but of all the ones that I knew back then, Nonsuch is the one that has survived.
Right. Yeah, we were part of the Redwood School Association. We still are. Our mother board is the Redwood School Association,
but
we're the only school left in that.
I was going to say,
it was
what
an
else
association
is
of small, private, mostly nonprofit schools, secondary and primary schools.
And what is sort of the core, I guess you would say, what core mission? What is
the core mission of the school? Yeah,
to make smart people to the world.
To bring smart people to the world. What I like to say is that what we do is that we take in students who are either at risk or alternative learners, and what I would say otherwise normal, normal teenagers, and what we do is give them a very individualized education. So I might have a class with five kids in it, and I might have one student who says, well, I want to be a singer-songwriter, like I have had one last year. And so we would create a time and space to work, we kind of work in individually. At the same time, we're accredited, and we send kids off to college, and we send kids off to life.
I know one friend of mine who I can talk about because he's at times been well-known in Sonoma County, and that's Rob Cole. If you remember Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob, I remember he had trouble in, you know, he was the boy that they made the movie about, Here's Looking at You, Kid, which is about what happened after he was severely burned in a fire. And I was very naive when I met Rob because I thought, oh, people must have been really gentle with you and treated you really well. Oops, public school, that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. He was picked on. Yeah. Including by the teachers. And when I was first getting to know him, he told me this one day where a kid had beat him up and taunted him during recess, and the teacher punished Rob for it. And he had had enough, and he used a very common expletive, gathered his books, stood up, and walked out. And as he was walking out, he said he felt like, you know, the sky was going to fall and crush him. But he just kept going. You think sixth grade, that's when it happened. That's not a very mature person. Poor thing. But bless his mother, he went to his mom. His mom took him out of public school and enrolled him in Nonsuch. And you're born brilliant. Yes, and he has just really blossomed. And whenever I'm hanging out with Rob, I just think, God, Nonsuch did such a fabulous job.
Right. Do you remember when he had that little shop down?
Yeah, Cafe This.
Cafe This. Yeah. I used to sit in the window, and I loved it during the rainy season. You could sit in the window and have an intimate conversation, and the rain would be coming down on
the did some stuff. I helped him with the menu, helped him get the menu going, and you know, did various things with him there. Yeah. He's in San Francisco now, doing lots of film and video, or video and music collage and performances and stuff, and has just really developed a really big following for himself in San Francisco. So I think you guys really, really allowed him to blossom.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story.
Now, you have, in reading the information about your upcoming benefit, which is the reason you're here, you have sent some of your students to Katrina to work on the rebuilding, I mean to New Orleans, to work on the rebuilding effort. Is that right?
That's correct. We went down this spring after the hurricane, and I think it was April of 2005 for the first time. And we connected up with Common Ground down there. And at that time, they had actually had no buildings. They had nothing going on. It was still pretty bare ground. And what they did was they had the kids set up tents on top of three or four pallets. The ground was so toxic.
They just,
they'd keep them off the ground. And they spent that first year down there just cleaning and wherever they could find to clean, just cleaning out areas and trying to figure out what they were still trying to figure out what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And they ran a soup kitchen, and they were down there for about 12 days, came back, absolutely changed.
Mm-hmm. What grades went?
These were juniors and seniors. Mm-hmm. And then we went down again last year, and they mucked out a house. That's kind of a common term down there now. Mucking out a house means you go in, and the house that they took still had all of the people's belongings in it. They had just had to abandon this house. After this has been 4 years now. We're in the fourth anniversary, going into the fifth year, cleaned out the house, tore down all the drywall. Really give it a great cleaning, and then started to rebuild to put in more drywall.
That's really intense work for anybody.
Absolutely.
But meant for high school kids.
Yeah.
So they've been twice now.
They've been twice, and we're going again this year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And how many kids do you send?
We usually send about a dozen. Mm-hmm. Our junior and senior class, you know, as many as one will go, so it's usually about a dozen or so. And it's a life-changing experience for them.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Almost more than anything else. You know, you could say, well, forget everything else you did in high school. Just go to New Orleans and spend 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. If I was queen of the world, I would make everyone spend some. There were certain things I would have people do. Spending some time in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Spending some quiet time in New Orleans.
It is kind of
one of the things I would have them do.
The American Mecca for music and food.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is that, too.
And then the life experience of how the city developed culturally. It is the only true real melding pot in America where the cultures actually melded together to form one.
Right. And we're talking the formation of the Creole culture.
Creole Acadian culture.
Acadian, yes. Yeah. We've had a few conversations about that here in Martha. It's really interesting.
Right.
And you do enter this other world when you go to New Orleans. But the last time I was there, I was really struck by, you know, I guess it was, it was in January, so 3.5 years after Katrina. And I was just really struck by two things: how lively and fun-loving, you know, and just the sensual pleasure of eating and drinking and listening to music and the ubiquity of great music if you go to the right parts of town. But right underneath that, just the raw emotion that the people that, I mean, you'd start talking and the next thing you know, somebody is telling you their story and they're crying.
And with a tear in their eye.
Oh, yeah. Or more than a tear in their eye.
Exactly.
I had that experience several times. I was very, very touched by it.
Well, me, I couldn't even talk about it without crying for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
I came here 4 days after Rita. So that means I was standing chest high in water at Rita. We evacuated for Katrina. and going through the incredible emotional my family has been in Louisiana since the very beginning. We were some of the first people to ever go to Louisiana, the first people in Texas, the first people in Alabama. And my ancestors are part of the dirt. I have a little saying that my family got there right before they put the river in.
Wow.
And my family's fought in every battle, Battle of New Orleans, Civil War, owned plantations up and down the river. And when you see your homeland, especially all the old cemeteries where my family are put to rest in there, they're mausoleums, they're beautiful.
Oh, the New Orleans cemeteries.
They're incredible experiences. And when you see that full of water, you know that your ancestors' remains are being jostled around by water, and it tears you apart.
Sure.
And especially Absolutely. When you're so richly ingrained in a city, like my family is, it tears at your seam. And then seeing everyone in your family losing their possessions, like you mentioned, the mucking of the house. I went into my sister's house 4 days after Katrina hit, which is August the 29th. And what you see is unbelievable. You see parts of the kitchen in the living room, parts of the living room in the kitchen, or stuff floating down the street, belongings of yours. And knowing that you're standing in a house 3 or 4 feet off the ground and it had 8 feet of water in the house, it's really hard to grasp how big and how awful it actually was.
You have to see it to know. You have to see it for the full impact.
One analogy I've always used to explain it is that if you've never been to the Grand Canyon and you see pictures of the Grand Canyon, you go, wow, that's really beautiful. But if you stand on the rim of the Grand Canyon and you look in it, you go, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. So when you see all the bad that happened in New Orleans, not only on the 29th of August, but the years after it, including now, and you go, oh, my God, that is really awful. How can that happen in America? But when you're there, you go, like, how can this really happen anywhere in the world? It's such a sad story.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that the reason that we're talking about this specifically tonight is the benefit. Let's give people the essentials of the benefit.
Okay. Well, the genesis of this benefit actually comes from my efforts to recruit students this summer. And I realized that I had a book out with photos of our Katrina trips. And people were looking at the photos and they're going, strange looking school you work at. And I go, well, that's not our school. This is New Orleans. And I realize a lot of people have put into the way back burner what's going on in New Orleans. And so I decided I'm going to do a benefit, and I want to do one in August. And I arbitrarily picked the date, the 29th of August. Had no idea it was the fourth anniversary at the moment. And everything started to come together with it very serendipitously.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell popped up and said, hey, I want to cook. Terrell's a friend of my son's who went to Nonsuch, and they had become friends I don't know when you guys got together, but he just said, well, hey, I'm ready to cook. I want to cook at this benefit. And I was able to get the Zydeco Flames. They said, we'd love to come in and play music. So essentially what's happening is on the 29th, at the Masonic Center in Sebastopol, starting at 6:30, we're going to start serving meals. And we're going to serve meals to go and meals to sit down. We're looking to sell about 300 meals in 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 8 o'clock, the Zydeco Flames are going to play, and they're going to play for relentlessly for till 11 o'clock.
Till 11, that sounds great. And the price, it's a bargain.
It's a bargain price. $15 to $50 sliding scale, which is what I'm really telling people. Just, you know, some people will drop $50 in the pot, some people $15. And the dinner, which is a total bargain, I think it's going to be $10, and there'll be drinks extra.
And when we come back, we'll talk about just what that dinner is going to be.
said it's gonna be that way.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, I love you.
Yes, it's Mouthful, and we are talking with Terrell Brunet, a chef from New Orleans, and Alan Lindsley, one of the core teachers at Nonsuch School. How was your open house 2 weekends ago, I think?
We had a couple of people come up, take a look at the school. Oh. Yeah, it's, you know, it's summertime.
Yeah.
Actually,
and it was a really, really hot day.
It was a hot day, and yeah. A couple of people came out and wandered around in the woods. It's nice and cool up there in the woods.
You know,
we have a ropes course, and so the kids love it.
Yeah.
We're down in enrollment.
You are?
Yeah, we are. All, you know, pretty much all of the, even the charter schools are now.
Really?
And we, over the last 3 years, we had an attrition in our senior classes. When a class would graduate, we didn't get as many kids back. So we're going to be a small, cozy little school this fall, starting on the 8th of September.
What's the student body? What's the total?
I think we're going to be at about 30.
It's a great size.
If, yeah, it's, a great
if
size.
It's sustainable, that's a great size. Do you think, what is it? Is it the economy?
Well, partly the economy, and partly it was the rise of the alternative, the charter schools.
Oh, the charter schools.
School movement.
Uh-huh.
And now they're getting hit really heavily this year, probably more so than the regular public schools.
And why is that?
The teachers' union.
Oh, really? Oh, I don't. Okay.
They're non-union.
Oh, they're non-union.
Primarily. So, you know, when it comes to push and shove, the union's going to say, well, you know, push on the charter schools.
Okay, that's territory I know absolutely nothing about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the menu.
Let's talk about food.
Yeah, let's talk about what we're going to be eating. I should say, you know, there are some opportunities to eat New Orleans food other than, you know, in your kitchen or in your neighbor's kitchen if they cook it. You know, in various restaurants. Tuesday nights at Starlight Wine Bar and Lounge, Starlight Restaurant and Wine, you know where I mean. The train car there in the Gravenstein Station in Sebastopol. Tuesday nights, red beans and rice, 15. Red beans, rice, I think coleslaw and cornbread. One of the best deals in the county.
Yeah, red beans and rice is a traditional dish that you can still get every day on Monday. Not every day, but
every Monday.
It is a Monday traditional dish. Not only red beans and rice, but white beans and rice too. Big, fat, white, navy beans. And always cooked with a piece of pork in there, ham hock, pickled pork, sausage of some sort. Monday was considered to be wash day.
Right.
And beans are very easy to cook. And usually the Sunday dinner had a leftover bone or pork or ham or something from the Sunday dinner, which is a huge dinner. Usually eaten around 2 in the afternoon. That's a very Southern thing. The whole family gets together after Mass and gathers at your grandmother's house or somebody's house. And the wash day was such a tedious day because everything was done by hand that they'd put a pot of beans on. And literally all you have to do is every time you walk by the pot, you stir the pot. So red beans and rice still, if you go to New Orleans and what they call the CBD, y'all would remember that from all the footage. It's downtown New Orleans where Canal Street is, where a lot of the looting started taking place, and where the Superdome is. There's all these lunch places.
Mm-hmm.
And still, to this day, you go to any of these restaurants in the CBD or all these neighborhood restaurants on Monday, it will always be red beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
Served with pork chop like we're going to do, or a piece of fried chicken or a piece of grilled sausage.
Mm-hmm. So you're having red beans and rice at the party?
Red beans and rice. Pork chops that are going to be smoked, and we're going to do greens, but we're going to do them more West County-ish. And instead of putting a big,
oh darn,
yeah, I know. we'll have an assortment of different greens, collards, and mustards, and all. And in order to get the smoky flavor, what I'm going to do is I'm going to smoke some portobello mushrooms, and so it'll be greens and rice with portobello mushrooms.
Oh, you know, that's not a bad alternative to the nice ham hocks or other pork you might put in there.
Yeah.
Going to have, is it traditional to put vinegar on them?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, good.
Beans, you can go with either a Louisiana hot sauce or pepper vinegar. Whereas greens, are usually just pepper vinegar of some sort. That's something that your mom would make, a pepper vinegar, which is clear with different peppers that you would grow that you pickle in the vinegar itself. And the greens, especially mixed like this, is sometimes called gumbo zub. Gumbo zub, with no meat, by the way, is a Lenten dish served during Lent in New Orleans between the day after Mardi Gras, Ash Wednesday, to Good Friday. And it's the only gumbo that's actually served with rice on the side instead of rice in the dish. And it's made out of as many greens as you can find, mustards, collards, even lettuces.
Oh, really? Oh,
interesting. Spinaches and things like that. The French way of pronouncing it is gumbo fine herbes. But the short name for it in New Orleans and South Louisiana is gumbo zeb.
Well, that'd be interesting to know exactly how that transitioned. But that's it. Gumbo zeb. I hadn't heard that name before. So anything else? Dessert? Any other dishes?
That's what we were going to do. We're going to have a big plate of the red beans and rice and the pork chops with a little bit of the greens on it. Uh-huh. And then for a little less money, the vegetarian version of just the greens and rice.
Mm-hmm. And there'll be dessert served and beer
bread
and wine.
Pudding?
Bread pudding?
We're still working on that right now.
Okay, you got to get somebody to do bread pudding.
Oh, okay.
But I'm
going to
clamp my hand, hand over my mouth and not volunteer to do it.
That's one of my favorite desserts.
Oh, bread. Anybody who knows me knows I'm not into desserts, but a good bread pudding.
Well, it's got a shot of whiskey in it.
It's got a shot of whiskey and it's got a good dose of butter.
Oh, that's an understatement.
Yeah. So, yeah, bread pudding.
Usually a whiskey sauce, which is
Butter.
Half butter, half sugar.
And a bunch of whiskey.
And a bunch of whiskey.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong. Yeah, that bread pudding, it's just a great thing. Can we talk about, for a minute, can we talk about muffuletta?
A muffuletta, yeah. One of the more finishing graces to the cuisine of New Orleans was the Italians who came right during, before and after the Civil War. And the Italian immigrants came to New Orleans because it was mainly Catholic, one of the few all-Catholic places in the country to come to. They came up with the Irish also. The Italians and mainly the Sicilians, who play a huge role in post-Civil War days in New Orleans because they take over a lot of the labor, especially the craft labor of tile workers and iron workers. A lot of the iron work you see in the older parts of New Orleans was actually done by the Italians, and especially with some of the finishing touches of the Creole cuisine. They start introducing more Italian methods of cooking. We have a dish in Louisiana called shrimp Creole or chicken Creole, which is actually Italian 100%. And it is a tomato sauce that's based off of Trinity instead of and onions and carrots. And you will find that all these dishes that kind of develop in New Orleans, the Creole cuisine, the haute cuisine of Louisiana, are heavily Italian influenced because they become a major part of the house help and the larger mansions. The French Quarter itself, which was kind of waning itself away from the aristocracy Creole and becoming more ethnic, the Italians kind of moved in and created their own Italian ghetto. And they started opening up their own pasta shops and their own sandwich shops and everything else. There is a place that is on Decatur Street that is, which used to be called Rue de Lévis, because the levee was there. Mm-hmm. It was a very rough street. It's where a lot of the shipping commerce out of New Orleans used to happen, where literally boys would get stolen on the street, put on a ship, and off to sea they go. That's the stories that we were told. And in the old bars and everything along Rue de Lévis in Decatur Street, which my grandfather had one. And Central Market, trying to boost their own sales and trying to help the Italian immigrants, created this Italian S sandwich, which is usually mortadella, salami, and some kind of Genoa ham with provolone and mozzarella cheese and an olive salad. That's the key, is a good olive salad.
And the bread.
The bread itself, now I don't remember the name of it. It's a very large round bread. Now, if you were to take both your hands and put it around a football, that would still be big. But if you put your hands around a soccer ball, that's how big this bread actually is. And a whole muffalata would be that whole piece of bread.
And when you order one in a restaurant, you get something that big.
You either you order it by a quarter, a half, or a whole.
Yeah. And we ordered a whole one. My daughter ordered a whole one. We were at Pearl Oyster Bar.
Pearl Oyster Bar, yeah.
And I got red beans and rice. We got a platter of oysters. Mm-hmm. I got red beans and rice with sausage, and she got a muffaletta. I took one bite of her muffaletta, asked him to pack up my red beans and rice to go. We shared her muffaletta, and we still had enough to take home. It was New Year's Eve, to take back to Mississippi and slice up for appetizers.
The next day?
That night for dinner. It's a huge sandwich, but there's...
Yeah.
And I had both Central Market and the one at Pearl.
Yeah.
That one at Pearl.
My favorite one is actually at the Napoleon House.
I've heard that. I didn't get there.
Now, the Napoleon House is an interesting building in itself. It's very old. It was built for the mayor of New Orleans. And when Napoleon was exiled to St. Helena, the pirate Jean Lafitte and a lot of the aristocracy of New Orleans tried to go fetch him and bring him back to New Orleans to live. And they were going to allow him to live in the mayor's home. And he died before they got there. And the house itself, I don't think, has been painted since then. They actually have rooms to rent. One of these little secrets of only New Orleans now, you can actually rent rooms upstairs.
Really?
But you have to talk to the owner personally in order to rent the room. Mm-hmm. You got to know the politics in order to get there. But you go in there and they play classical music, and they're known for their drink, which is the Pimm's Cup. And they have muffalatas. And they have the best muffalata in town.
Okay, next time I go. Now, something else. I bet you're going to be able to tell me if this is really true. I heard this story from the woman that did it. And I think it's at Antoine's.
The first place I ever worked.
Okay, well, she was told to walk in. And although she lives in Sebastopol, she's her mother was a Southern Belle, so she's got it in her. And let me tell you,
probably
she does.
Probably one of my cousins.
Well, she was told to go to Antoine's and ask for one of the private rooms.
Yes.
And that she would be told, "I'm sorry, ma'am, we don't have private rooms." Yes. And that she was supposed to put her hand on her hip and she'll say, "Well, I happen to know you do have private rooms and I want one," and then she'd get one.
New Orleans is very unusual, especially for the old guard restaurants. That's Antoine's, where my family comes from, Arnard's, Galatoire's, are the three of the old restaurants. And each of them have their own lore. Antoine's, where my cousin was senior waiter for 65 years and only left one time, and that was to go land at Normandy.
Wow.
And his name was Numa Vinay. And I was the first member of my family to work in the restaurant business not to go in the front of the house as an assistant waiter. I went in the kitchen. That's another story for another day. But when you make a reservation at these old guard restaurants, you don't call them and say, "Speak to the maitre d', I like a dinner for 8 o'clock. You ask for your waiter.
Yes, for the waiter.
You if you knew Numa, who's not with us anymore, you go, "Would you have Numa call me?" And so Numa would call you later on, and you'd go like, "Numa, I have 8. This is what I want for dinner. I'd like to sit in 1840 room. And be sure that you have a baked Alaska." And then you go in there, and Numa would probably know everybody's cocktail, which you always start with cocktails, as our stories before in our break we already talked about. And the dinner would last 3 or 4 hours. And Antoine's itself has, I don't know if it's 16 or 18 dining rooms, all scattered throughout the restaurant. This is the oldest restaurant owned by the same family in America. It's been run by the Antoines or the Alciators or the Gust, all related, since 1840. And this is where I got my start. I got my start as a position as a passe, and that was a gopher. And that's early part of my culinary career, is I started as a gopher in this French kitchen with lots of stories. You know, 22 men in the kitchen, four, five, six women, only six women, Miss Lucy, who was there for 67 years making salad. Old woman who actually used to swing a knife around. Two women who did nothing but baked Alaskans. Two women on cold and one woman who did all the coffee ice cream. One guy who did oysters. Antoine's is known as the creator of Oysters Rockefeller.
That's right.
He did nothing but Oysters Rockefeller and Thermidor and Bienville all night. And he would do 300-400 orders a night. Palm Souffle Station, where they make just souffle potatoes. Uh-huh. My first hotline, which was Entremontier, which was a vegetable guy. And then I later was on the fish grill, where I cooked pompano. And pompano is a very oily fish from the Gulf, probably my favorite fish in the world. And the greatest thing about working the pompano grill is that I smell like pompano permanently. So I never had a problem getting a seat on the streetcar on the way home because no one wanted to sit next to me because I smell like oily fish.
So you have to bathe in lemon juice?
Well, New Orleans water is toxic enough. It comes from the river itself. So
how long were you at Antoine's?
I was at Antoine's for 3 years, and I got accepted into the Culinary Institute.
And when was this?
This was in the early 80s, and no one knew what the CIA was at the time.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
And this was way before food on television, when we had the Fugu Gourmet and Julia Giles, right. God bless their souls. And I took off. Everyone thought I was absolutely out of my mind. And went to school in New York and stayed in New York after that.
Oh, you did? Mm. So have you not worked back in New Orleans since?
Yeah, I went back one time, and I was a chef at Café Sabisa, which is a very famous bistro. I was there for quite some time. And then my career went between New York and San Francisco and then back to New York. And then I was teaching at CIA. And when I was teaching at CIA, I was offered a job as a culinary director of a company in Louisiana. So it was the first chance I had to move back. Mm-hmm. And I was there until
Katrina.
Until Katrina and Rita, uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you said you lost your job.
Lost my jobs. Uh-huh. I was teaching at a college. I was the maitre d' of a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore.
What was that restaurant?
It was called Alberta's. It was on Magazine Street.
Okay.
The hurricane hit 7 days before the restaurant was supposed to open.
Oh.
And I was going to be the maitre d' there because I was teaching in the daytime and working there at night. And then I had my own consulting company like I have now, but that part was.
All right. How's that go, Sean?
Yeah, it's Mouthful. We are in New Orleans again. Could never be there enough. We're talking with Alan Lindsley, a core teacher at Nonsuch. The benefit called Remembering Hurricane Katrina is taking place this coming Saturday, August 29th, at the Masonic Auditorium.
It's called the Masonic Center.
Masonic Center in downtown Sebastopol. We'll be giving you, before the show ends, don't worry, we'll be giving you contact information for teachers. We're also talking with Terrell Brunet, chef from New Orleans and many other places, and you know, with just so many great stories about New Orleans. And then we had a phone call. Pickled pork and good andouille in Northern California. And for people who don't know, would you describe pickled pork, please?
Well, yeah, everyone thinks that everything in Louisiana is all smoked pork that's flavored with just sausage. That's not true. One of the most popular things to cook beans with, especially in the New Orleans area, is pickled pork. Pickled pork is something that you can pick up at your grocery store.
In New Orleans
and in on the Gulf Coast, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Where to find that in Northern California, I know how to make it, but...
Is it easy to describe?
Yeah, it's actually just like you would pickle anything. It's a vinegar solution that is where the pork is brined. In the solution itself, and it's usually part of the Boston bud or the shoulder of the pig, and it's used to flavor beans and greens, and you know, a few other dishes too. Now, an andouille, I have found a great maker of andouille, and it's right here in Sebastopol at the Pacific Market. They get their sausage made from a fellow in Petaluma. Now, Alan, you talked to that guy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Richard Caggiano?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah, Richard. That was going to be one of the ones I named. Richard Caggiano is making a nice andouille.
It is. It's better than nice. It is. It's really a damn good sausage.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I use it, if I get my groceries, or as we say in New Orleans, make our groceries. If I make our groceries.
That's so cool.
If I make my groceries at another store, I will go pick up andouille from the Pacific. Mm-hmm. Very good stuff. Not always the cheapest, but it's definitely worth it. And when I make a gumbo or red beans and rice or whatever, I definitely make a huge difference. Otherwise, you have to go for like a Polish kielbasa, which is just not the same.
No, it's not the same. And one thing with the internet today, I mean, shipping and all that.
I was just going to suggest that.
You can call Central Market. Central Market will overnight you a muffletta. They'll also throw in, you know, a jar of olive salad. I figure they'll probably put in some pickled pork if you want.
There is a oh my God, I just can't think of the name of it. If y'all email me, I'll remember. There's a family outside of Baton Rouge, and at Bowbridge, Louisiana, and they have internet sausage, and they have pickled pork and sausage, and save my
life. Well, you know what? How about this? I will get the information from you, and I wanted to tell everybody anyway. Mouthful now has a Facebook page.
Ooh.
It's you search for it. You go to Facebook and you search for Mouthful, comma the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, and it has a page. So I'll get this. You can become a fan. We're up to 51 fans. We've only had the page for a week.
I'll add you tonight.
Cool. And I will get the information and I will post a link to that place on the Mouthful Facebook page.
And then I have terrellbrunet.com.
Oh, great. I'll put your link on there too.
That'd be lovely.
And also today, because now every week, once I know who's going to be on the show, I'll put up a notice on the Facebook page and I included a link to Nonsuch School. When I put that up today. So I'm trying to just drive more traffic there, partly because my goal is to then start posting recipes from people who are on the show and getting all the links of everybody. Because, you know, you don't always remember to be in the room with a pen and pencil.
Exactly.
And we have this vehicle to do it, so we're going to do it.
And at 50, I can't remember anything anymore anyways.
Yeah.
There's that too. So you're cooking for the benefit.
Yes.
What else are you doing? What else do you do?
Well, since West County, I've been consulting restaurants between Northern California and New Orleans, writing wine lists, consulting on menus, consulting office, back of the office labor laws. And it's been rough because of the economy, but it's still been fruitful for me since last year. And I called Northern California my get well pill. And as much as I've always tried to go back to Louisiana, I think I found a place in West County, and I lived in the Sexton Valley.
Oh, you live not far from me.
And Jed, Alan's son. And it's such a beautiful place. I don't think I'm going to win any place.
Really?
So we're here to stay.
Wow. Well, then, but you always have family. You can go back. And one of my goals is to, you know more people in New Orleans so that I can go and have a home experience, not just a hotel experience.
It's quite different.
It is. I mean, I have to say, Pavillon Hotel through Hotwire, which is, you know, because they won't identify it, but it's the only one in its category. I didn't get in. I was supposed to get in at 10 at night, and we got stuck in Chicago. I got in finally to the hotel sometime around 2:30 in the morning, and I told my daughter, don't wait for me at the airport. Go to the hotel. Go to the bed. And when I walked in, I was really ragged, and this guy, real short little guy behind, he says, well, darling, I do need to see your ID, but I got to tell you, Michelle, we've been waiting for you. You must be so tired, honey. It's like, oh, I've died and gone to heaven. I don't care how late it is.
That's
and
how we roll.
Everyone was so nice. And in the hotel, it's, I think, 8 stories high.
Yeah, it's an old hotel, but it is a high rise. Well, what they would call a high rise 80 years ago.
Well, first of all, in the bridal suite, they have Napoleon's bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
But up on the roof, they have a swimming pool and a hot tub. They don't close, a big, huge hot tub. They don't close at 9 o'clock like they do in most American hotels. They close at 1 in the morning, and they have a little booth that's even covered in case it rains, where you can call and ask them to bring you a cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll bring you a cocktail up to the roof while you're sitting in the hot tub. I mean, it's New Orleans.
Isn't it civil living?
It is the most civilized place I may have ever been.
Well, you realize that, you know, well, people go out to eat around 7, 8 o'clock at night, but people don't go out until 11 or 12 because it's just so damn hot there.
It's too hot.
And all the clubs, no matter if they're air-conditioned or not, it's just hot.
It's just hot. My favorite club closed.
Oh, which one was
that? A few months ago. Spotted Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was so sad when I heard that that closed. I saw the Feral Cats there, and I thought that they would have a website, and I could get their CD through the website, but they don't have a website. So I have to go back to New Orleans just to get a CD of the Feral Cats because they're great. And we're running out of time. So, Alan, all this chat about New Orleans. How do people, what's the best way to get tickets or make reservations or whatever you do before the benefit?
Tickets are available at Copperfields.
Okay.
They're available at Community Market, and they'll be available at the door.
Oh, they will be available at the door.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so Copperfields, all Copperfields or just?
Just the one right now in Sebastopol.
Sebastopol, and then Community Market
in Santa Rosa.
Mm-hmm. Can people call a number to get
tickets?
They can
call my phone number, 696-6800 for information.
696-6800.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. And all these details are also in the Mouthful column that came out on Friday in the Press Democrat. You can find that online. A little difficulty, but in fact, you can find it. So, but you can get tickets at the door. And remember, for $10, you can get your you shouldn't reduce the price for vegetarian. $10 is a bargain, no matter what the dinner is.
Yeah.
You can get your dinner to go if for some reason you're not up for Zydeco. Maybe you broke both legs and you're not up for Zydeco dancing. Starting at 6:30, did you say?
We start at 6:30. We'll open the doors.
Continue to 11.
Serving meals till well past 8 o'clock.
And kids can come, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely right.
Okay.
Kids can come under 12 free. They're coming free.
Okay. Great. Well, outstanding. I hope it's a really successful benefit. And there's so much for us to talk about. You both have to come back sometime.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you for being here. I also wanted to tell you that there has been a miracle in the publishing world. Saver Magazine was quietly retired in May of 2008, but it has risen from the dead. We should have the hallelujah chorus queued up, Lawrence. There is a new issue of Saver Magazine. It is a harvest issue. It's on the newsstands. Season of Gold is what it is called. Lots of stories about wine country at this time of year. So I don't know what it means about the future, but for now, there's been a new issue of Saver, and that's a really good thing. So thanks for tuning in. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour here on KRCB.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Listen to